This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
Today I'm talking to my friend Jonathan Farrington from across the pond. He is the CEO of JF Consulting, his own consulting group, a global consulting group that handles business around the world. He's also the person behind Top Sales World, where a bunch of us publish and post and share ideas with the larger sales community around the world, and a new blog called Sales Thought Leaders blog, where I'll be participating too. And we just started talking, and I hit the record button before Jonathan knew we were recording. And I'm just going to drop you right into the conversation there because he's so funny and it's so much fun. And we're going to talk about big ideas on what's going on in sales right now from his view, get you a little bit of a global perspective. So here we go. Without any further ado, Jonathan Farrington.
But what I like is in the foreground, we've got the sort of all the technical, you know, wonderfully professional technical recording stuff, and then there's this little bald head, and then in the background there's this entire library. I mean, it's very, very impressive.
That's not the entire library, that's just two of the four shelves here.
Oh okay.
And then of course I just picked up the new Kindle Paperwhite.
Yeah,
and because it's such a nice device and it's so good for reading in different areas. But when I transferred my account over there, it said my library consists of 1,112 books on the Kindle.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite a few books.
Yeah, well, you see, most of us work for a living, Anthony.
But we trade in ideas, don't we?
Well, yeah, we do. That's the whole point of Top Sales World, isn't it? Collaboration.
It is. And I've got three questions for you. We'd riff on these.
Yeah.
Only three, but three questions for you and I might take 2 weeks.
Go on, then.
You've written something a number of times that strikes me as interesting. You've written that there are going to be far fewer salespeople in the future. And I think you've even written that we'll go from something like 18 million to 3 million. And I'm prepared to be wrong, but I believe that that's hyperbole. But let's say even that it's directionally right. What's the change that's going on, and what are the implications of that kind of change with sales moving inside and the reduction of a real sales force? What does that mean for people that work in our field, in our space?
Okay. Are you recording yet?
I am. Why, you don't want to be on the record for this one?
Yeah, I do. I thought you were going to start formally by introducing me.
Oh, no, I'm going to do a big introduction at the beginning of this thing.
Okay. Well, the first thing to say is that's totally incorrect. I've never, ever said that. This is based on something that Gerhard said about 3 years ago that I picked up on. And Gerhard said there are 18 million salespeople in the world, and that's going to reduce down by 80% before 2015. He either said 2015 or 2020. Okay. So I followed that up. In fact, I did a keynote for OneSource, for OneSource's launch in the UK, when I picked up on that. And I've asked Gerhard about this, and I'm sure you have too. I think the reality is that if you look at the aftermath of the recent financial meltdown, we've already lost an awful lot of salespeople. But when I checked into the 18 million figure, I actually found it was only 12.8 million, by the way, which is a lot less than we thought. And I think Gerhard was talking about North America. He wasn't talking about globally. Whereas when I've taken, because I'm a European, I've taken a rather more global view. And I suspect that we probably have around 100 million salespeople globally. Now, what I believe, Anthony, is that there's because when Gerhard says something, he thinks it through. It's very rare that I've ever known Gerhard to say something glibly, unless, of course, he's being humorous. And he put a lot of thought into that. My view is somewhat different. I actually don't necessarily think that we're going to lose that many salespeople. So, you know, it wasn't hyperbole. What it was is sort of taking a deeper look at how I think things are evolving. And actually, this is what I think, and I'm happy to be quoted on this. I think 80% of sales jobs are going to change in some way or another between now and 2015. And you put into that this massive drive into inside sales from outside sales. And we can discuss that in more detail. But also, it's my view that a lot of sales roles are going to turn into customer support roles. Because I think the two most important functions within the commercial space between now and 2020 are going to be marketing and customer support. Okay, you only have to look at the Amazon model. And yeah, I know that everybody's saying, well, you know, we know they don't employ salespeople, but they're only selling commodities. Well, actually, they're not. They're making inroads into all sorts of marketplaces now. And you can argue, what a commodity is. My view about a commodity, you've heard me say this before, is something that can be bought with a credit card. And, you know, if you think about how many solutions can be now purchased with a credit card. Yeah, a friend of mine bought a secondhand Bentley 6 months ago, and he never even saw it. Okay, he bought it online, and he bought it with his credit card. And I think that sort of kind of gives you a view of the way it's going. So I do see that in many sectors, the sales role diminishing. Yeah, I mean, for 3 or 4 years now, people like you and I have been saying, well, you know, so the customers are coming in so much further up the chain. They don't need us. They don't need us to educate them. They don't need us to give them information. They're finding it all out before they come and find us. Yeah, of course, all that's true, and that will continue. So I believe that right at the very top, we'll still retain 20% of professional salespeople working in a collaborative, consultative way. But the other 80%, I believe their roles are going to change, not disappear. And I need to be clear about that.
You think that we're still moving towards a more transactional purchasing model, and that there's no, well, let's put it this way, there's not as easy of an ability to create value as a salesperson because the internet's disintermediating the ability to create value?
Yeah, I do agree with that statement, Anthony. And I think that it's becoming much more harder, much more difficult to create differentiation and uniqueness. And if you can't do that, then why are you needed? You're just the same. The playing field has become so level now. I mean, we always knew that product uniqueness didn't last forever. We know that international barriers have come down. And all of these factors lead me to think that, you know, plus, of course, you know, salespeople going inside, lead me to believe that it is the top 20% that are going to survive and thrive. And the other 80% are going to have to change their focus. They're going to have to change their skill sets. I think that's really what's going to happen.
You've been at this for a number of years, let's say more than five.
Many more than five.
Many more than five.
But less than 100.
And leaning that direction anyway.
Yeah.
And I hope it is 100. You've seen a lot of changes. So this will lead us to the second question. And I think the changes that you're describing are there's less value to be created at a transactional level, which means a salesperson needs to be able to create value that's outside of that transactional value, because I can go to the internet and push a button. And if I can push a button, you're disintermediated. So what do you think a salesperson needs to look like to succeed and to make it through this change and to be in that top 20% or stay in that top 20%? What do they need to be able to deliver to customers?
I do want to make, I'm very happy to answer that. I'm very pleased to answer that question. Before I do that, I want to make a point. When we think about this bottom 80% and the decreased and diluted value that they're going to bring to the buyer-seller interaction, I think it's very much the case that people like you and I and so-called top sales experts and commentators are actually concerned, and we're not actually being as honest as we possibly can that this is going to happen. And this is all about self-preservation, because if 80% of sales roles change, are we going to lose business? And the answer to that is yes. So how many people like us have actually gone out into the sales space and asked customers, do you actually mind whether you deal with a computer or whether you deal with a real person? In other words, do you actually mind that the trading relationship that we have is going to become transactional and you're not going to see me as often as you used to? In the same way, when I'm talking to people that are considering moving their business, when I'm talking to CEOs and they're thinking about changing the way their sales team sell for purely, well, predominantly financial reasons, because we all know that an inside salesperson costs less to support than an external salesperson who's got a company car and an expense account and can probably only make 4 calls a day, whereas an inside salesperson can probably make 6 or 8 far more economically. Okay, so when I'm talking to these CEOs, I actually say to them, you know, have you asked your clients whether they're comfortable with this kind of relationship? And actually, I was surprised to find how many have. They have actually, they have taken into account their customers' and clients' requirements and thoughts and needs and feelings. And they say, yeah. And actually, when we ask them, they say they don't mind at all, because it means the relationship is so much flexible. They haven't got to waste time sort of, you know, giving us lunch or, you know, setting up meetings for us. They can go online and talk to us anytime they like. So going back to your question, I think that the new breed of sales professional that's, as I alluded to earlier, that's going to survive and thrive are going to work on the formula that you and I have discussed often in the past, Anthony, which is attitude plus skills plus knowledge plus process. And not necessarily in that order, but attitude has to be fundamental to that. But I do believe that knowledge is one of the key, is probably within that equation after attitude. Knowledge is the key, because if you want to differentiate yourself, you've heard the expression hundreds of times recently, insights. Okay, we know that clients today haven't got time to waste on irrelevant conversations and irrelevant meetings with us. It's of no interest to them. They've got far busier things to do. They have their own businesses to run, and that, you know, they're trying to get out of the, you know, the financial meltdown situation. So our knowledge that we can demonstrate. You see, typically when you mention knowledge within the sales space, people automatically think, ah, product knowledge. That's automatically what they think. And it's not surprising, because I think I saw some figures the other day that suggested that even today, 60 to 70% of training budgets are spent on product training. It's not important. Our clients don't care about our product. They don't care about us, and they don't care about our company. What they do care about is what we and our company and our products and our solutions can do for them. If we can have impact, if we can save, gain, improve, increase, etc., then that is of interest to them. And I think that by demonstrating our commercial bandwidth, our commercial knowledge of what it takes to run a company, what it's like to be in their position right now, what their concerns are, looking at it from their side of the desk, I think we build a much stronger relationship. And when we go in, they want to talk about their industry. They want to talk about what we know that can help them. This is bringing insight, and it's absolutely right. So many people are talking about insights, but I do wonder just how many people understand what that means.
I don't think anyone does. I mean, I think insight is, you know, a flash of an idea. You make some connection with something, but I think that you're right. It's now business acumen and situational knowledge and thinking like a good general manager. How would you help this business improve from where they are? And it's not product anymore.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And you know, what I'm doing with my clients, Anthony, is I'm working to develop their top team's commercial bandwidth. I mean, I do love that expression. And people say, well, what does it mean? Well, it means the breadth of your commercial knowledge. It's as simple as that. And to be able to go and talk to decision makers and understand what they're thinking, what they're doing, what they're feeling, what their commercial concerns and their commercial objectives are, and looking at it from their perspective, and then tailoring and dovetailing whatever you've got to offer in a way that can bring value to their company and impact both their top line and bottom line. That is bringing insight.
And those will be the survivors in our 20%.
Yes, they will. I do believe they will. And these people, you know, most of these people are quite extraordinary salespeople. You know, I used to talk about top 5% achievers. And these people just have a different array of skills. And somebody asked me the other day, you know, is it typical that a top 5% achiever, you know, is of a certain age? And the answer to that is no. But it's much more difficult when you're 25 to have all of that experience to bring to the table, of course. So yes, in a sense, they are often older because it requires age to gain the experience that the clients and prospects need.
Youth is wasted on the young, isn't it?
I've always thought that. I would like to borrow some from somebody if they've got any spare and they're listening in.
It's interesting. I was working with a group of young salespeople, and it's truly a disadvantage to be young and look young, because in my experience, our clients want to work with somebody who can relate to the challenge they've had and who has some depth of experience. And until you're able to carry yourself that way, it's difficult to get the rapport and to get the trust that's necessary to talk about big ideas. One rep is young, and he's got really, really good product knowledge, more product knowledge and a more sophisticated view of how to help his customers than even his customers have. But he's young, and he's only been in the industry for 10 months. So when they look at him, they don't see what they need to see. And so even though he's got the right solution and the right advice, they don't take it seriously.
No, and you know, frankly, having great product knowledge doesn't pass the so what test, does it?
Not easily enough.
No, that's the difficulty.
Let me run you down the third question here. So you have this enormous gravitational pull that's dragging all things sales to top sales world, and you publish, you share from everybody who thinks and writes and coaches and trained salespeople or sales leaders, and you've seen a lot of things come and go. How do salespeople make sense of all this? How do they avoid things that are fads and shiny objects, the easy answer, and stick with what they really need to succeed? This idea that you have, that you call commercial bandwidth, I call it business acumen and situational knowledge. How do they avoid the one easy answer and make sense of all the stuff we put in front of them?
Look, I think what we have to realize, and I know that you definitely have taken this on board, Anthony, a long time ago. We all say rather glibly, every customer is different, and as a consequence, we must tailor our solutions accordingly. Okay, we all say that. I wonder how many of us genuinely believe it. I know that you and I do. And if we do believe that, then we have to accept that every single salesperson on this planet and every single sales team on this planet is different too. The one-size-fits-all training, coaching, counseling has never worked, and it never will. And I think that, you know, a word I would use based on your last statement is relevance. I think well, there's two strong words here, or there's two pertinent words here. One is relevance, and I think the other is focus. And I think that every sales team that's being led by every sales manager or VP sales, and then filtering down to individual salespeople, have got to consider what are the skills? What are the commercial values, personal values? What are the personality traits that they need in order to be successful? What works for one person doesn't work for another. What works for one company doesn't work for another. And what works in one sector doesn't work in another. I also think that salespeople need to accept responsibility. We all know that as a direct result of the financial meltdown, that the investment in human capital development really took a hard knock. And that's probably, in my view, the main reason why we are seeing sales achievement levels spiraling downwards alarmingly. And we are. So I think salespeople have got to say, if it's to be, it's up to me. I'm going to take total responsibility. I am Anthony Anarenu, Inc. And if I'm going to be successful, then I've got to take responsibility for that and not sit around and wait for my manager or my company to make me successful. And I think, you know, our primary objective, you know, again, as you know, Anthony, for Top Sales World, that's now almost in its eighth year, has always been to continually try to raise the bar in the sales and marketing space and to offer free resources daily, weekly, monthly that people can have access to all around the world that's going to help them achieve their daily objectives. And that has always been and will always be our primary objective over at Top Sales World.
Let me go back to the original question one time. I want to just push back on this a little bit and get your thoughts on this before we end. I'm happy to take our share of the responsibility for the one size fits all approach. But how many of our clients, you know, especially in sales training and development, want the prescription? How much of this is driven by their side of this, that they just want, come in and give me the answer? And have you had the situation where they want you to tell them the answer, and the answer is really they have to do more work thinking about what that is and creating that culture within their own company if they want to make it stick?
Well, I think it's very easy to prove if you're in our position and you're going into a new prospect, it's very, very easy to prove your point, Anthony. We always, before we even agree that we're going to take the assignment, we always conduct a very full survey of attitude, skills, process used and knowledge. And that's all knowledge. And then we make a presentation. Not necessarily always at board level, of course, or in the C-lounge. And it's very easy to prove once you've conducted that audit where all the shortfalls are. And I couldn't possibly consider taking on a new client unless I knew everything that was going on in that company. Because, you know, we are putting our reputations on the line whenever we accept a new customer. Unless you're glibly going in there and thinking, yeah, well, I'll just deliver that because I just want the money. I grew out of that thought process many, many, many years ago. And I think that all of the people, or most of the people on our team at Top Sales World, and you included, of course, you know, have the mindset that there's pride at stake here. I don't just want to come out with a fat check at the end of it. What I want to come out with is a good job, and I want strong referrals, and I want to be invited back again. Most of my clients have been with me for more than 10 years. And I hope, I mean, I believe that, you know, as I said, that most of the people that you and I know work with that same doctrine.
I think so, too. Even though you have to push back and tell them that they can't have the easy answer, they have to have the right answer.
Well, yeah, I mean, if once I have presented my findings and as a consequence said, well, look, you know, this is the solution. This is what you need to do. If you don't do this, then you're not going to achieve your objectives. If they say, well, no, we don't want to do that. We want to do this. I say, OK, well, I'm sorry. You know, I can't work with you. Because it's rather like going to the doctor and the doctor saying, well, look, you've got to have an operation, Mr. Anarenu. If you don't, you're not going to feel well again. You say, well, I don't want an operation. He's going to say, well, you're not going to feel well again. It's exactly the same.
How do people connect with you? Where do we send them when we leave here?
Oh, it's easy. Interestingly, when I'm at parties, and particularly if I'm talking to somebody I don't like, they say, what do you do? And I say, well, Google me. You'll soon find out. And then I walk away. It's easy, really. We're over at Top Sales World, and I've got the consultancy over at Jonathan Farrington. So jf@jonathanfarrington.com or jonathanfarrington.com, and it's all there. But the exciting thing is, of course, we've just launched Sales Thought Leaders blog, which you know, we're honored that you're part of that, Anthony. We've taken 16 people who've got something really, we believe, really unique to add to the sales space, all at the top of their game, who've come together as a little team and are posting regularly.
Rattle off some names.
Oh, well, there's Anthony Anarino, Linda Richardson, Gerhard, there's Howard Stevens, there's Joanne Black, there is Tamara Schenk, there is Tiffany Bovary from Chile. Is that a few for you?
That's good. Okay. Well, we'll put links at the bottom. Thank you so much for your time. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thanks very much indeed for inviting me, Anthony. It's a pleasure.
You can find Jonathan Farrington at jonathanfarrington.com. You can also find him at topsalesworld.com, where you might find me hanging out too. You can also check out Jonathan on his new blog, Sales Thought Leaders Blog. I am Anthony Anarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. Until then, I'll see you next week in the arena.